With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Our first guest is the former Lieutenant Governor of Maryland and MSNBC political analyst and host of the Michael Steele podcast. It is Michael Steele.
Yeah, that's it. It sounds like a superhero, don't it?
It does. There's his super suit.
Lexington Steele is the porno star, but Michael Steele is a superhero. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm good, brother. How are you doing? It's good to see you.
It's good to see you, too.
I hope you're doing well.
I'm doing well. You know what? I have to tell you that I see a lot of sadness in your eyes. I do. I think I remember feeling so bad when you decided that you were going to go against the party that you have loved and served and delivered the majority to them almost a decade ago, and they summarily ousted you. I think I was more sad that you seemed to be the last to recognize the party. I think it's more difficult when you kind of in a situation, but I think it made me sad that someone who I know is a dedicated forthright and I think bright person who could be a beacon to that party be discouraged by it.
Yeah, no, it's been frustrating as hell. There's no doubt about that. It has been very difficult to take the walk that I've taken, certainly over the past year, given everything that, you know, I know and have done and tried to do, you know, espousing particular values and ideas and principles that I think are mattered for a competitive political process, but for, you know, I think how we govern the country, and we can have different views on that. What I think has been the most disappointing for me is watching people just completely capitulate on those values, to basically crap all over them and say the only thing that matters is Trumpism, which is not even defined by Trump himself, other than white nationalism and putting kids in cages and saying crazy stuff. So it's been tough, but, you know, as I say, you know, I'm self-described Lincoln Republican.
Sure.
And that goes back to the roots of the founding of the party. But today I'm more like a Motel 6 Republican.
Don't
leave
say
the
that.
Lights on, baby.
You know, it says a lot that party always refers to himself as a party of Lincoln. It's you have to update your resume when the dude you keep referencing is on the penny. Like, you really, that is, you got to go back to the dude on the penny that... I watched something, and it's to me the dichotomy I see. I watched this earnest Georgia official talk about how somebody's gonna get shot, somebody's gonna get hurt, somebody's gonna get killed because of Trump's rantings, and he had a point. Except he didn't say that when Trump said stand back and stand by. He didn't say that when governors were talking about getting kidnapped. He didn't say that when. So I think that there is a level of inherent self-preservation and selfishness that manifests itself Like, there's always this kind of thing where we got to have this mutual, that, well, they're just as bad. And I can't recall a Democratic leader courting national white nationalists. I can't call them coddling the people who talked about committing violent acts. I can't recall them trying to dismantle democracy. So there is no same thing here. There's no,
no,
they're not the same.
I agree with that. No, I think you're right there. There is no sameness on that front. Now, you know, we can disagree and have a big debate around what the policies may look like. And I think that was the second part of this election, quite honestly, is why the House Democrats lost 11 seats, was because of some of those intrinsic fears around progressive policies, which the country's just not willing to buy at this point. But that's a debatable point. I think more broadly, what you're seeing right now, DL, is it the culmination of a 1960 strategy that goes back to Goldwater in 64? Culminating there in, at that time in the Southern strategy, which Nixon deployed to try to get elected president. And then that then morphed into the more religious sort of faith-based strategy in the South, particularly among evangelicals that were put into motion by Ronald Reagan in 1980. Because remember, the Republican Party was largely a Northeastern-based party. It had very strong libertarian roots. It has very strong, views about the role of government. And the most important tenet was the limited role government should play in an individual's life. That then changes when we take on a lot of these social ills that were bereft the country and politicize them, as we saw with abortion, for example, by putting that in physically, putting it in literally, in the Republican platform. First time it's, you know, that happened was in 1980. So we've been sort of on that pinwheel for the longest time, going round and round on these subjects. Meanwhile, the country has continued to advance. And that's something that I remember back in the day when I was chairman, I came on your show at the time and got into all kinds of hell of trouble.
Don't let two black dudes hang out each other. Don't let them actually have a cordial conversation. You niggas break this up. We don't need that.
That's right. But we did. And it was a great conversation. And what I tried to do was to sort of move the party more into where I thought the country is headed. And turns out we were still going in that direction. Where the country looks a lot more like me and you, and expanding that economic and other opportunities, you got to have that conversation.
But they don't want the thing that's interesting to me is if you look at, I believe that the parties the brochure of the Republican Party inherently is attractive. The inhabitants of that brochure, the people who embody or are supposed to embody its mantras, are horrible people. I can't think of one redeeming one that I can even think of right now. And that's not to say that I think much of the other side, but I'll say this. I think that it says a lot about a nation that for almost 40 years hasn't, ever since George Bush's father, George Bush Sr., the country hasn't voted for a Republican. The majority of people haven't voted for Republican in a national election. They haven't voted to be led by presidents, and yet Republican presidents, and yet they are. So in other words, the minority is leading the majority for all kinds of ridiculous reasons. And it really shows that we have this. First off, I think the Electoral College is one of the reasons we're in the place that we're in, because there are too many people with too little contribute having too big a stake in the future of the country. I think we're the Flintstones and the Jeffersons, the Jetsons, and the Flintstones are running the country. I think that has to change. But I also think that these fiefdoms, the way that they can set things up, they don't have to have an appeal to anybody, just their small groups, and they can eke out a win. And that's no way to govern. You can't. We're governing by people who have a little interest in advancement and only interest in protecting their narrow perspectives.
No, I think that's right, actually. And it really speaks to the evolution of our politics since probably the early to mid 80s. For certainly, we saw that culminate and really have an impact in the U.S. House of Representatives when Newt Gingrich was able to, basically change the internal operational structure of the party of the House by making it much more partisan. And that was born out of, keep in mind, you know, everyone likes to talk about, oh, you know, Republicans and redistricting. That, well, no one was complaining when Democrats held the House for 40 years.
No.
So when they redistricted those lines to keep control from 1954 to 1994, you know, everybody was like, okay, we're cool with that. But the reality of it was that was a reflection of the politics of the time. What we're seeing now is an additional reflection of the politics in these times that is much more personal, it's much more partisan, and it's less focused on actually solving your problem as to maintaining power for self.
But I think it also has a different...
My tribe.
It also has to have somebody to blame. There is, and I hold this to be true, and I don't think... there is nothing you could blame black people for that people wouldn't agree with no evidence. Like, right, the case in point right now. Basically, what Donald Trump is saying is that black people who had the most antiquated voting equipment, fewer pre-swings, longer lines, found a way to rig the, and let's be clear, if black people could rig anything, it would be to fix our credit. I mean, it's only 270 to be president. It's 620 to get a car. So,
exactly.
So, but that 80% of Republicans believe it. They believe it. They believe that it was rigged because they believe that we are somehow, because really the truth of the matter is he cheated so much under everybody's nose, from the time to dismantle the post office to kind of weaponizing militia groups to all kinds of things to kind of basically vilifying mail-in ballots. He did everything he could and still lost. He can't believe that he did all those things and still lost. I know he knows he lost, but he also knows that you can blame black and brown people and it will have purchase. It will have an audience.
Well, yeah, I think, A, that's true. But the B part of that is not just blaming black and brown people. It's recognizing that a significant number of white folks will go along with the argument as well.
Yes.
And so you can't, it's not just this isolated, let's just, you know, put it all at the on the hands and the backs of black folks and brown folks why we lost the election. What they're trying to reconcile is the fact that Donald Trump picked up 11 million additional votes or 8 million additional votes over 2016, that Donald Trump's, you know, Republicans picked up 11 House seats, took back 11 House seats, and right now still has control of the Senate. So it's much about, you know, creating this narrative as we saw since the killing of George Floyd.
Sure.
You know, that, you know, all of a sudden Black Lives Matter is the you know, the most god-awful thing on the planet. And, you know, all this rioting and, you know, okay, white women living in the suburbs, you got to be careful because they're coming for you. And as I said, on numerous occasions, coming, we're already here. We are in the suburbs.
Right. Have you watched the NBA? Have you seen?
Thank you.
Have you seen Jason Kiskis? You said, I do believe, like, I understand, which to me defies logic. Why is he not arguing if the election was rigged? Why did it help the House and mitigate the damages to the Senate? And why are people buying it? Yes, it was great that you lost that he held onto 11 seats. He also lost Arizona and Georgia. Ant is on the brink, and I think once Texas goes, it's gonna, and that will eventually happen. Then we'll start having an argument about the Electoral College. But these victories, they just mean a simple thing. I think that we come too close. I think before this is all done, he'll lose the popular vote by around $7 million, which is more than the population of the state of Alabama and the Dakotas and Vermont. Like, all it'd be like three states that, almost right. four states that he lost. Why? And the argument that it was even this close and that we're anywhere in the direction that we want to be led by him, that's actually a valid conversation, that people can't even say that this man is not the president anymore, won't be the president after the 20th, tells you a lot about all the things we need to fix and all the things that keep coming up and playing in our life. This tribalism is one thing, but the idea that it finds purchase in a group of people who are willing to believe the most outlandish shit for their own devices. I just don't understand it.
Well, you put a lot on the table. If I can unpack just a couple of pieces, because I think they really kind of speak to where we're going to be heading over the next few years. Number one, you're absolutely right about states like Texas Arizona, Georgia. The demographic shifts there are a reflection of the broader shifts that are happening around the country, number one. Number two, I predicted back in 2006, 2007, that by 2024, 25, 26, Texas is a battleground state. This is the last election, and I'm just telling you, this is the last election Republicans can count on winning Texas in a presidential race, because the numbers, it's all about the math, and the math doesn't work for them. And that's something that, you know, they want to continue to ignore. Fine. You know, it's like the kid in the back of the class, math class, you know, having to take a test and wondering what 1 + 1 = It's right. Not 3, baby. Right. It's you.
It is in my school. You know? It is in my school. But let's not talk about Avalon Gardens.
Right. But the other part that I think is important is the fact that when you look at this election, Trump lost Georgia.
No matter what. And Trump lost Atlanta. Atlanta. But he won.
He lost Atlanta. But last time I checked,
that's in Georgia.
Atlanta was a part of Georgia.
Yes, indeed.
And that means a whole hell of a lot of white folks voted with those black folks in Atlanta.
It does. Right? It does.
And so that's the thing that I think is going to be so critical over the next few years. Look, when we go into the 2022 cycle, where you have the House back in play because every seat is up.
Right.
And then you have roughly 33 Senate seats, of which the majority are going to be Republican seats. How does the party reposition itself to have a narrative and a conversation with a voter like yourself or a voter like me?
But they can do it. They can do it by a simple way. I do not agree with your policies, but I always find you to be honest, clear-sighted, sober, and articulate. I've always, like you articulate a Republican Party that you and I have never seen or certainly haven't seen for a long time.
This is true.
You haven't seen it for a
long
time.
I don't know what the hell's wrong with me.
Right, I was going to ask you that. But like, he got Lil Wayne, he got Ice Cube, he got so many, he was talking to so many rappers, I thought he wanted to be president of Death Row, not the United States. But what they have done, and he's indicative of, he's bastardized it to the nth degree, but they think they can pick symbols of black people instead of black people. Lil Wayne is a tremendous artist, but he's not a political pundit and isn't reflective of the majority of our experiences. Someone like you is, but what happens to you is that you give them a historic win and they find a way to oust you, and we can't pretend like we don't see it.
Well, and you know, so the politics of that has to do with what I did when I was in the room, and largely I came in and started changing the system from within, and started having conversations that required a couple of things, the least of which was money.
Right.
So I start putting on programs in Harlem and in Watts and places around the country, Atlanta. People go, wait a minute, you spending money? No, we're not spending money in black neighborhoods. Look, this is tell you how it was for me, and I knew what I was up against. So, I don't go into these things half-cocked. I understand what the realities are. So my first official press release as chairman of the RNC goes out. So I call the cons person in the office. I go, well, so who'd this go to? And they go through the whole list of folks. And I said, well, did you send this to the Afro and, the black press? And the response was, oh, well, that's specialty media.
Yeah.
And I went, you got a black chairman, right?
Right. You know, because you'll be trying to fire him in 2 years.
Right.
Yeah. I think that it happened before you walked into that meeting. I do. I think it didn't just happen when you were. It happened from the day you were born. And it happened.
Exactly.
Listen, I respect you. I talk to you all the time. I have a tremendous amount of respect for you. I cannot for the life of me understand that if somebody were doing to something I love what they are doing to a thing you hold dear, I could not in good conscience support them. I couldn't say that I still want to, and because if they didn't listen to you when you had the reins, they're not going to listen to you when you don't.
I understand. I completely understand it. But let me put it to you this way, DL, because I do appreciate that, and it's a struggle. So if I leave my house, where do I go to? Where do I go?
Where
does someone like me, who's about making changes in the system, how do you do that when you have no system?
I think
to support you.
I think
so
that you're wrong.
Being an independent, our country's not built at this point. Now, it doesn't mean that it won't happen and that some of us can be a part of that in the future, near future, but we don't have the infrastructure to do that. If I go going to the Democratic side of the aisle, okay, I could go stand there with a whole lot of other black folks, for sure, but then philosophically and politically, where do I fit
without
in?
Without a death, they can't be a resurrection.
I've been told that that's not, I'm not well.
Without a death, they can't be a resurrection. And I would tell you this, that where we go is a place where like-minded people go. And I just refuse to believe that you are staying somewhere where you are not, you don't belong. It's like the furniture doesn't go in this house anymore. And I'm not saying you should move somewhere else, but this can't be about an allegiance to an idea when you have the wherewithal and capacity to create another one.
You're right, but it is to a certain degree about an allegiance to an idea and a set of values and principles that orient you. All right.
Sure,
so my
sure.
orientation for the last 40 plus years of my life as a Republican has been born. That's why I personally define
myself
as a Republican.
But when has theirs been that way? Okay, the orientation that is ingrained in you, that you fight against. Listen, they don't fight against their demons. You do. You fight against the people who look like you, who sound like you, who come from your experience. You do it because you believe that there's a better way this way. They don't. They don't challenge people that are like
them.
But
I agree. But that's not. Keep in mind, that's not everyone. And I totally understand.
Who is it not? Like, explain to me.
Well, it's not the Nicole Wallace's, the Steve Schmidt's. It's not a lot of folks.
But they're not Republicans anymore.
Some have just recently left, but there's still a whole lot others that are still inside for the fight. And here's why. So let me put it to you this way. So just to put it as bluntly and as crassly as I can, I come to your home. Somehow I get in your house, either by invitation or just showing up. Now I'm in there and I start shitting on your carpet. I start tearing off your wallpaper. I break your mama's fine china. Do you leave? Or do you kick me out?
No, the police, you know what they call that? They call it a police raid, and I got to deal with it. That's what happened. That's exactly what happened. They go, nigga, my bad, we're sorry.
Police, my friend. You may call the police, but you're not leaving.
Listen, Ronald Reagan said he didn't leave the Democratic Party, it left him. And they have left your idea a long time ago. They have.
What was that?
Ronald Reagan said he didn't leave the Democratic Party, they left him. And I'm not telling you, this is not my argument. My argument for you is basically this. I watch what happens to you. I love you. And I'm not, listen, we don't have the same belief. And I watch what happens to you, and it hurts me to see a black man who could be a beacon in our community helping people to understand the value in having people well represented on both sides. You could do that. But instead, what you have to do is argue nonsensical things to people who aren't going to, who believe their eyes. I know
I call them out. I call out the nonsensical stuff.
But then you say, I have to stay here to change them, to bring them around.
No, I don't say I have to stay here. I say at the moment, I want to stay here to change this because I think it's worth, look, until we are able to create something differently, we're going to have
but
this
we are right
system.
Now this very second
you have to have a viable party you have to have a viable party that can govern and look it's hard to just sort of walk away from 45 years of sort of grinding this out and fighting through this for sure. Doesn't mean you can't or you won't,
right.
But at least right now we as a country have, and certainly we as Republicans have, a better view of how messed up it is and how we have lost sight of those underlying values and those underlying principles.
Who would you say feels like that besides you? Who would, I'm talking about this in the fight, this in governance. I'm not talking about who had to leave and who had to make choices. Who do you see right now that embodies what you believe and is in governance right now, speaking truth to power and knowing that this party is going in the wrong, this country is going in the wrong direction? Who is that? Who do you build that? Who do you hang that?
I look at my own governor right here in Maryland, Governor Larry Hogan.
Okay.
I look at Governor Charlie Baker of Massachusetts. I look at Governor DeWine of Ohio.
They govern states. I'm talking about in our and they govern states. But I'm not talking about, I'm talking about the people that are controlling our lives as a nation. Obviously, Hogan has done a great job.
Oh, they control your lives, too. Your governors control your lives much more than a member of Congress does.
Well, that depends. No, I wish that were true, but
it
is.
What state do you live in?
The state of denial.
Well.
When are those people in power? Like, there is, in the Senate, I don't know who that is. In the Congress, I don't know who that is. In the administration, I don't know who that is.
But that's not. Look, the one thing fundamentally you have to understand, we don't lead by the federal level. We lead at the state level. Mm-hmm. Governors have far more influence and power over what happens. Look how Donald Trump reacted to the governors during the COVID-19. If he was all powerful and almighty, those governors would have fallen to his heel in a heartbeat, but they didn't. Because they know at the end of the day,
the governors,
we need you to do certain things, but if you don't want to do it, we make a way.
The governors that did do it are the reason we're in this position right now. I think that we're having now, we are in the pandemic would have been horrible no matter what, and no one can deny that. And I don't put that in, but I think that the lack of leadership from the top down and giving people orders, marching orders, and cohesion, has cost people lives, livelihoods. Yep. And listen, for all
but
we know, this country may never come back.
Yeah, but just imagine if governors did nothing and they just waited on Trump.
Some did.
Some did, but then they had to come around. Even those governors had to come around and impose restrictions and go through the routine. They may have done it 6 weeks after Larry Hogan in Maryland, but they had to do it. Why? Because they sat around and they looked at the people getting sick and dying in their states. And so whether you're looking at a situation with Governor Whitmer out in Michigan,
right,
or you're looking at a situation of Governor DeWine in Ohio, the end result was the same. Now, look, you do, and don't even get me started on our boy down in Florida, because the only reason he was able to do what he was able to do in Florida is because the president gave him everything he wanted right up front. Why? Because Florida is a battleground state, and president wanted to win
right.
Florida. So the reality of it is you're absolutely right. This pandemic required national leadership that can only be provided by the president of the United States. And he summarily, fantastically failed, right? Fortunately, we are a republic comprised of 50 independent states that get to make their own decisions and to govern themselves ultimately. And they did. And those governors, by and large, all of them, even given the stragglers who were coming up afterwards going, okay, I'll do it, did what they needed to do to try to protect their people and to provide what they needed for their hospital workers, et cetera. But I'm not missing your point. I get your point about the national leadership, and I do agree. I wish there were national Republican voices that would stand up to Donald Trump and say, dude, shut the hell up and do what you need to do to prevent COVID-19 from spreading and getting worse. But that didn't happen. I thought there would be a reckoning on that. I thought the American
people would
exact the price.
Yeah, and they did not.
And they did not.
Right.
So that says a lot more about us than it does them.
And that's, here's my thing. And I have my vantage point, and I have yours. And I never want you to believe for one second that the political prism I view things from, or my perspective, has any, you're one of the few people that I can say honestly across the aisles that I respect. And even to some degree,
well, I
understand.
Know. We've talked a long
right.
time, brother.
But,
I know.
But I will say this. This notion that we have to be beholden to anybody, that we have to, there is a way. Because I would say this. You and I are not too dissimilar in our desires for the people who look right. like, for America, period. But
I'd
in
agree.
General, I think that you rise from the bottom up and not from the top down. I think
That's
that we
right.
haven't done enough for our poor. I think that we haven't done enough to for our base. And by base, I mean the thing that holds us together. But
right.
I want to dispel a notion right now. I think we can go as far together as we decide we will, as like-minded men and women decide we will. And if a party was doing to what they did to you was one of the reasons I despise them so much. I watched what you did. I watched you build them. I hated that it happened. I saw you delivering them this thing, and they showed you the door, and they've been doing that ever since. All I want is what you want. I want a nation that is fair and equal, and that people actually get the opportunities that it talks about in the brochure. And you are a person who's uniquely qualified to do it. And the fact that you stay here when we could do more together is a bit of a conundrum for me.
I understand that, and I appreciate that, and I'll just say straight up, I'm willing to move the agenda. That's what I've always been about. I mean, people who know me, the Republican label is the Republican label, which is why when I did my announcement endorsing Joe Biden, I wanted to make it very clear it wasn't about the label, it wasn't about the party, it was about my country. And it was about the people I love in this country. When I sent out Thanksgiving Day tweet, it was a Thanksgiving message to everyone, not just these, you know, crazy-ass Republicans I get to hang out with. So I totally get that. So I want to build that thing with you. I mean, that's important. That's important because what it shows and what it represents is so much about the Black community as a whole, but how America constructs itself. And so the paradigm that we've been working under is one that was designed not by us, but by others. What we have now is an opportunity in the face of what we know can be bad and how bad it can be. We have an opportunity now to write a different chapter going forward.
Agreed.
Despite the outcome of this election.
Right.
That's one of the reasons why I got behind Biden, because at the end of the day, I think he could begin to lay the right kind of ink on the right kind of paper to start to write that chapter. Now, could be very quickly disabused of that notion in 8 months.
As could I. If God didn't think that was a possibility, he wouldn't invent tequila. So I'll be all right.
Amen, brother.
I want to say this.
Amen.
I don't have much use. I don't have much use for
it. I wasn't dressed up because I didn't know how you were coming tonight. So.
These niggas are drunk. I don't understand why we listen to them. Listen, I don't put much stock in them. I don't. I put a lot of stock in you. And if I haven't ever told you before, I have a tremendous amount of respect and love for you. So if I think that, and we come from diametrically opposed political views, but I don't have any animus toward you and your perspective at all. If anything, it is the way that I've seen them treat you. But if you say we can have a conversation with these kinds of people, I'd love to be. I would love to be a conduit to that. But I just don't think that the notion that we have to be kind of connected to anything for us to move forward is one that it's one I used to really believe. But now I'm like, I've seen even this election taught me a lot about unity and power and what it can and how it can beat. It takes a lot to beat an incumbent president, particularly a demagogue incumbent president. And through a cohesiveness, we managed to do it. And I think you people like you on that side could go a long way in forming this coalition that brings not only the nation forward but our communities forward.
Well, I appreciate your words. I really do. And like I said, you and I we've had quiet moments to talk about life and liberty. And I would disagree with you on one point. I think we may find ourselves more politically aligned on certain policies than you think. You used a word that we don't use enough, and that's poor. We don't talk about the poor and poverty. We know how it impacts our community. It's something I tried to address when I was lieutenant governor here in Maryland, and certainly tried to have us speak to from a policy standpoint as a Republican leader. But at the end of the day, it's about how we advance the cause of our community, not the cause of a party or the cause of one individual. And that's the fight that I've learned to fight in this one. I'll tell you, it's been hard at times to kind of walk away. I've got, you know, Republican friends who don't talk to me now. And I'm like, okay, I'm better with that now. Right. Okay, I'm good.
Right.
I'm good.
Right.
Because it really is about where we want to be as Americans and who we are and what if nothing else, I've learned is that this election has shown that there are a whole lot of us that hate us. I think we need to start with that.
Yes. He's drinking and telling the truth,
right? He is telling the truth.
He's always
we might want to stop
now.
Right there.
So we're going to stop right here.
Right here.
They're coming for us, Michael. Hey, man, I love you. I'm proud of you. Here's to you, man. Have a happy holiday, man. And thank
happy
you for
holidays.
Coming on, man.
Brother,
absolutely. Look at that.
I love you, man. One day we're going to fix the world as soon as we get rid of this DUI I'm about to get. No, I'm just kidding. All right. I love you, man. Thank you, Mike.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Our next guest is an 11-time Grammy nominee, renowned national recording artist, and of course, pastor. We know him as Bishop Marvin L. Sapp, but some people refer to him as Warren Sapp.
Stop it. It's not true. It's not true. And like I said, then he's a Christian.
Yeah.
He has to forgive me. He
heard about that embarrassing moment.
I was embarrassed. I don't really care.
I know you were.
I will say, you obviously, you know, I'm a very cynical man, right? But I got to tell you, and I told them this story on the radio like a couple years ago. And so LaDonna had been in my car, and she always puts gospel music on in my car. And she left that song, Never Would Have Made It.
Yeah.
And I pulled over and cried. I was like, I should get my life together. And then I went to see my side girlfriend with a drink in my hand. I realized it wasn't going to happen. But... But I think at best,
I'm
not even trying
what
to be.
A terrible
I
way
think
to
at
introduce.
Best, you find a way, and I've noticed this about a couple of gospel artists, and I think that sometimes the world looks at it and goes, he doesn't do it this way, and they should do it this way in the world. But what I will say is, your music, in that, that was one of the first times I'd ever felt the gospel in my actual self, in my actual embodiment. And I think it takes a special kind of artist to be able to kind of navigate all that. I do. Now, Warren, what do you think about what I just said? Stop sacking a quarterback and let's get to this gospel.
Well, I'm like, just first off, I'm honored. Thank you for allowing me to be on the show. And it was funny when just going back to that, the BET Awards, when you said Warren Sapp, shoot, I didn't care what name you called at that point. I won the awards. I was like, Warren, parents, whatever. But I realized more than anything else that the reason why this song even resonates with so many different people, because all of us at some point in time have had never would have made it moments.
Yes.
And
right.
When we get to thinking about all of the stuff that we've had to come through and we've had to endure to get to the place that we are, you know, the truth of the matter is that we just say, man, you know what? I never would have made it
right.
If it wasn't for, you know, that higher power, God being on my side. So hard to believe the song is 15 years old.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
It still has life. It's
Man.
In the club and everything now. It's amazing.
It is.
Yeah. Because I don't care who you are, because as soon as you hear it,
yeah.
It will, the first line, you just crumble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nah,
yeah.
Well, or put your clothes on and go home. You can do that too. There's all kind of ways we deal with the stuff we do. I remember the first time I was at Mons Venus in Tampa, I heard Stomp, and I was giving a stripper a 20. That was different, but... you have gone through a lot, and one thing a lot of personal tragedy, and one thing I always look to see, and not deliberately, is if the light is out in people's eyes, like the light
yeah.
is, and it isn't, like it isn't, and I'm not saying that it hasn't come, it hasn't been difficult, that you haven't had struggles, but what is it that you seem to be able to do? To know, is it that you know that so many people need you? That, is it that you just feel comforted? What does that look?
You know what? I just think that, you know, because I've been doing this for so very long, and I mean, I just think it just takes real faith. I mean, like, it's one thing to say that you have faith, and especially as a preacher, man, we have to get up all the time.
That's kind of the gig, yeah.
And that's the gig, you know what I'm saying? But it's one thing to preach it, but it's another thing that when you got to actually live it, when you got to go through situations, you know, in life, and then you got to go through them publicly. It would be easy for you to mourn or to experience loss or to go through challenges and stuff when you get the opportunity to do it when nobody really sees it and when nobody really knows. But then when it's all public and you got to do it in front of people, you know, the expectation is, again, is to go back and say, okay, I've been preaching this stuff all these years.
Right.
And now that I'm actually in it, now I got to really live through it. Now I got to learn how to apply those same principles that I've been teaching all these years to my own personal life. And that's what I made a decision to do. Honestly, I just really just decided, okay, yeah, this is a crazy season that I'm going through. And, you know, I could fold, but what have I been telling people? So I just went back and became a student of what I've been preaching and applied those principles. And, you know, I just made a decision that if I do that, I know that the rest of my days would be the best of my days.
What did you learn about you? What did you learn? Because I think the darkest times are the clearest times and the most resonant times. What did you learn the most?
You know, that's true. I think the thing that I learned about me the most is I learned that I was stronger than I thought I was. You know, when my wife passed away about 10 years ago, you know, all I had was my children. And I'm like, I got two girls and a boy. My girls was like 11 and 13. And I had this church that I was pastoring. I had a charter school that I was the founder of. I was traveling all over the world. I had Hot Records and all of these different things that was going on. And then I had to say, okay, well, you know, I'm going to prioritize my life. And what's most important is my children. But again, I had two girls and a boy. Two girls.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I have two of them. Yeah, I do.
And so I mean, I grew up in a house with all boys. So now I got to learn, you know, when my wife passed, she passed away before menstrual cycles and all that kind of stuff. So I had to learn about hips, lips, and thighs. I had to learn about menstrual cycles. I'm reading stuff. I'm on Twitter. I mean, on the internet, Googling, you know, trying to figure out, okay, do I get heavy flow or do I get, you know, all this kind of stuff.
So, do you get wings or without wings?
Yeah,
I'm so pretty sure you didn't have to do all, it wasn't all on Google now. To stop it, you may be a preacher, but you didn't get them darters from nowhere now.
But those were the things, honestly, that my wife took care of.
Yeah, I mean,
store and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, when my daughter calling me on the phone, hey, Dad, I need to stop by the grocery store and pick up, like, I'm like, wait a minute, I ain't doing this.
Right.
So I went to Costco and just bought as many as possible of the stuff.
He bought a pallet.
He may not get what you wanted to, but he going on to Costco. I gotta love to have you. I want to talk about you. I want to really take a moment to talk about your latest project, which my business partner Sonya Vine is just the biggest fan. Like, I'm not a fan of gospel. I'm a fan of yours because I think that you, what you do, I can it's like painting by the numbers for me. But what was your inspiration for your latest project? What's the name? What's the inspiration?
Well, believe it or not, you know, but I packed my bags 15 months ago. I left a church that I started, founded, paid it off, and walked away from it, and I moved to Texas. And I took a church here in the Fort Worth area called Chosen Vessel. So I decided, people thought I named my record Chosen Vessel because that was named my church. And I was like, well, that's great marketing, but that wasn't why I did it. I named it Chosen Vessel because I began to think about all the flaws, all the mistakes, all the things that I've done wrong. But even though I did some crazy stuff in my life, God still chose me to do what he wanted me to do. And I think that everybody needs to look at their life in that same way. That, yeah, you ain't the best person, but look what God chose you to do. Look at the impact that you're supposed to have. And in spite of everything that you've done wrong, he still looked past your faults and decided to use you anyhow. So that was really more or less the driving force for the naming of the album. And just to remind every individual that you've been chosen for this particular time, for this particular moment, and that your responsibility is to find out what it is and to make impact in it.
Man, I love you.
Wow.
Warren Sapp, you are the dope.
Listen, I know they beat you up over there. They really
yes,
did.
Yes, they did. We still beat him up over it.
But you know, maybe this is what I was chosen to do at that particular moment.
Chosen. It's all we want. So that nobody would ever forget.
All right, Marvin Sapp.
Thank you, Marvin
we love
Sapp.
You, man. Your pick chosen vessel up. It's the jam. And the dude Warren ain't bad either. He's a good dude too.
Thank you so much.
All right.